You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 3rd of December, 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, I am very pleased to say that we have with us today our eyewitness to history, the much respected Mr. I. Mr. I, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you doing? I hope you are well.
Yes, thank you.
And I hear you're going to talk to us about Unity Valkyrie Mitford today, a rather beautiful young lady. I've just been looking at pictures of her and reading up on her. I know a bit about her myself, but yeah. I'm sure you're going to illuminate what we know about her so far with more anyway. So please do tell us about Unity.
Yeah. Well, it's always been a mystery to me, and I've never been able to find out why Lord and Lady Reedsdale, her father, gave her a second Christian name of Valkyrie back in Edwardian England. Most of you, I expect, know that the Valkyrie were the maidens who gathered up the souls of the fallen heroes on the battlefield and conveyed them on their flying steeds to Valhalla. And, of course, it's very strange. You think of Edwardian England and all National Socialism and all that, and of course, which brought Wagner's music to the fore, was years away. Anyway, that's by the by. She was very fond of holidaying in Germany, and particularly the area around Bavaria, the mountainous part of the country. And she, one day, she went to a hostelry called the Hostelry Bavaria, and which happened to be the place where Hitler used to go for lunch in the days of Munich. And there was a time which I related in my talk last week when she went with her sister Diana, the later to become the wife of Sir Oswald Mosley, and Hitler noticed these two beautiful blue-eyed blonde girls and invited her enter to his table, where an obvious friendship developed, and he gave her a National Socialist badge, and she attended the first big black shirt gathering in Hyde Park. This was 1934 or 5. And, of course, the Red Mob turned up and fights and that began to break out. And one of them spotting this girl wearing a swastika badge, of course, she became a victim of assault. But three young black shirts went to her rescue and managed to get her safely away on board a bus. And they were most surprised to receive an invitation to this swank house in London, which was at Lord Reedsdale's London address, being invited there to tea. Now, of course, as the time went on, and she obviously, with her sister Diana, they were both active with the Black Shirts, and she still continued her holidays in Germany, and she became very concerned when the warmongers were talking about declaring a war on Germany, and which obviously upset her. And she did her best, through her friends and that, to try and keep Churchill, the main villain of the piece, out of the cabinet. But as you know, his wealthy patrons were able to manoeuvre him back into the cabinet, first as First Lord of the Admiralty, his position in the First World War. Because the war had we had declared war on Germany by then, and of course he immediately committed another disaster similar to that of the Dardanelles with his invasion of Norway, in which we suffered quite heavy losses, including the aircraft carrier Glorious, which went down with a lot of aircraft, and in addition to the Navy crew, there were a lot of RAF men on board, thinking that they would have been able to have made an aerodrome in Norway to disrupt the supply of Swedish iron ore that was sailing down the coast of Norway in Norwegian territorial waters. Of course, by which time the full-scale war had started, so that became a minor part of the war. Although, as I mentioned, we suffered heavy losses and a humiliating defeat. And, of course, it gave the Germans then controlled practically the whole of the European Atlantic and North Sea coasts, which made things difficult for us in the long run. Anyway, back to Unity. She still, when she stayed in Germany, after the war had started, and doing all she could through friends and acquaintances and neutral sources in Switzerland to try and end the war. And of course, especially after the defeat of France, when Hitler made his appeal to reason, I can see no reason why this war should continue. And he offered Britain the same term as he'd given to France, that is, with peace with honour, with our people safe, and our navy and our empire intact, which is exactly what he gave to the French. But of course that was complicated, because Churchill immediately gave the order for the navy to fire on the French fleet that were in harbour in Tel El Kebir in North Africa. And of course the activities of General de Gaulle in England, which spoiled the terms of the and of course Churchill and his mob would have nothing to do with Hitler's peace overtures to Britain. And so the war continued, and we all know the result of that, is that we lost our empire. We lost, I think it was about 750,000 people killed or wounded or injured in the air raids, which of course caused a great deal of destruction in Britain. And it was very fortunate to us that Hitler had made no plans whatsoever to attack Britain, because the aircraft used in the Blitz were medium range, twin engine bombers. The bombers were twin engine bombers, which didn't have the range or the heavy bomb loading that four engine bombers did when we began to devastate Germany. But of course, all these peace overtures, especially when the attack on by the Luftwaffe more or less ceased altogether, when the invasion of Russia started in June 1941, and we had relatively quiet nights in England until the winter of 1943-44, when they began reconnaissance flights over Britain, keeping an eye on the build-up for the D-Day invasion. And I can remember the flares that they dropped when taking their photograph. It was literally as light as day, these magnesium flares. And I always regret that I collected one or two of the parachutes that these flares came down on. They were beautifully silk. But I don't know what happened to them, so I no longer possess them. And so that was quite interesting. I know. By then I'd left school, and I had a job at a cinema. And of course, when all this was going on, we used to. It was just the projection room was on the roof of the cinema, and we used to go outside and watch all this. I remember the manager came running up the stairs. the film had run out. Oh, we were so busy watching these flares coming down. Oh dear. Yeah. And before Santa was the invasion did take place, and that was the end of the raids that we had. Apart from the start of the flying bombs and the V2 rockets, of which there was virtually no defence against them. Especially the rockets, you couldn't do anything at all. It was like they came down like an artillery shower. They couldn't be intercepted. But the only way they dealt with the flying bombs was obviously anti-aircraft fire firing at them, but fighters used to fly alongside with them and just clip their wings and tilt them over and send them into a spiral. That was the defence we had against them. But anyway, back. I'm digressing. I was talking about unity, of course. And, of course, she became increasingly depressed as the war was going against Germany and the terrible air raids were beginning. And Hitler appointed a member of his staff to keep an eye on her and protect her should anybody recognise her as an English girl and attack her. Obviously, that was a possibility. And one day, she went into the English garden in Munich, and much to the surprise of the chappie who was keeping an eye on her, she pulled out a revolver, pointed it to her temple, and fired. Now, I think it was because she perhaps had never fired a pistol before and wasn't aware of the kick that there would be. Anyway, the bullet went into the top of her head instead of her temple and lodged there. And it wasn't a fatal shot, but it did affect her brain. And in the end, she was, that's right, she was repatriated to England via Switzerland, which was neutral. And her condition gradually deteriorated, and she lived the rest of her life, dying quite young, obviously, more or less as a cabbage, as they call it, when she wasn't quite aware of what was going on around her. A terrible tragedy for a fine young woman. Yeah. Oh, so sad.
It is an absolute tragedy. I was reading about her today, and they've done some investigations since then, and that there are some allegations that she wasn't actually shot. She wasn't actually as invalided as was made out. There was an allegation that she had an affair. Do you know about any of these?
Well, of course, you can imagine what the enemies of Britain, the real enemies of Britain, would say, wouldn't they? They'd make up stories like that. Oh no, that's quite wrong. Quite wrong altogether. Yeah. So, the poor girl. She came home and with her family, and as I say, it died at an early age. I don't quite know how old she was when she died, but she didn't last much longer. Yeah.
And apparently, when she was in Germany, she ended up being quite close to Adolf Hitler, and she was invited to the rallies, and she had an apartment there, and apparently Eva Braun was jealous of her at one point. Writing in her diary about how she was jealous of this girl, do you think there was any concern about her psychological health before she actually went and shot herself? I mean, this guy was following her around as security to make sure that nobody attacked her, but could he have been also following her because he was worried about her psychological health?
Well, it's a job to tell, isn't it, really? She was an unusual personality altogether. But that doesn't mean to say that she was in any sort of psychological problems. I can tell you, a lot of people think the same things about me. Because of my views and the things I do and express, that I think I'm reasonably sane.
You seem completely sane to me. Very, very sharp. A lot sharper than most would be your age. I also noticed that she wrote in her diary that after meeting Adolf Hitler, she would be quite happy to die because it was the best moment of her life, and he was a great hero.
That's right. The tremendous effect he had on her. Well, it's he's altogether a really extraordinary person. And when you meet somebody like that, it's plain to affect you, isn't it? Both men and women fell under his spell, and because his intensity and his strong will, of course, that would attract women anyway, wouldn't it? A good, strong-willed man. And, of course, she wasn't the only one who attempted suicide because of him. There was his second cousin, was her name Trudy Rabau. She committed suicide, and of course Eva Braun, who died with him in the bunker at the end of the war. So her case wasn't really unique, was it? Yeah.
Why did his cousin commit suicide then? What was the reason for that?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that, sir.
Why did Adolf Hitler's cousin commit suicide? What was the reasoning behind that? Was that to do with the war as well?
Oh, no, that was before the war, yeah. I don't really know. Yeah. I want to remember her surname, Rabau, because that's the... when Germany owned possessions in Indonesia, one of their the capital of one of the former German territories there is called Rabau, so it was a name well known in Germany. Whether she was related in any way to the colonial people who decided to name the capital Rabau, but that's quite possible, I suppose. But, of course, that's a completely different story. Eva Braun, she did live with him towards the end as man and wife, so their relationship was very close indeed.
I think Adolf Hitler, he wanted to put across this image that he wasn't married, because a lot of the women in the German nation, they would have looked up to him. And I think if he'd been married, he would have been needing to spend time on his wife. And really, he was needed to spend time on the German nation. They were like a wife to him. And then I think...
You put that very well. Yeah. That's right, because he had tremendous respect for women, and he ordered that even in their desperate situation, women were not to be armed and take part in combat, and as I say, he had a very great respect for women, and the women of the German nation really appreciated that. And as you may know, that in the general election of 1933, when he came to power, a higher proportion of the female electorate voted for him than the male electorate. So he was very popular with the ladies.
I didn't realise that. That sort of flies in the face of the feminists today, doesn't it? Because he certainly wasn't a feminist.
Oh. Fortunately, I can't remember any feminists from those days.
They were terrorists.
Today, I don't know what they say today. Today, when we have female prime ministers and... Yeah.
I say the feminists back then were terrorists, weren't they? They were the suffragists. They were setting bombs off and all sorts of things they were getting involved in, and they were locked up, I think, weren't they?
Treason. The suffragettes. They caused an awful lot of trouble, didn't they? And what was her name? Mary Ellis, I think it was, went into the National Gallery and slashed the Ropey Venus because they decided that the painting of a naked woman wasn't appropriate. Yeah, she got up to all sorts of things.
Mindless violence. Mindless violence they were involved in with you know, no reasoning behind it, just property damage for the sake of property damage. And yet people look back on them today as if they're some kind of heroes. They weren't. The heroes were the mothers that produced these courageous young men, the flower of Europe's youth that ended up dying on the battlefields. It was their mothers that were the heroes. Not the suffragette terrorists. People like Unity that wanted to stop the war.
Yeah.
You think that's what what it was supposed to be, Mr. I? Do you think it was like a grand gesture of, you know, I don't want to live if Britain is going to be fighting against Germany and something's got to be done to stop this war? Do you think it was like a protest?
Well, I suppose if... like friendship between Britain and Germany, she'd worked so hard at, and then I think it became such a shock to find that all her efforts had come to nothing. And perhaps she thought, well, so it's not worth living.
You know, that's pretty similar to what happened at the end of the war with Goebbels and his entire family killing themselves. You know, and the reason for that was, you know, we couldn't live to see what the world was going to be like after our children had seen the beautiful world that Adolf Hitler created. And we didn't want them to, couldn't comprehend, you know, how dreadful the world was going to be. I mean, you imagine them looking at it today. You know, they were correct in their foresight. Anyway, I think we'll finish now, Mr. I. Thank you very much for that. That was really interesting. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We're going to do something a little bit different now, and we're going to play a track by Whitelaw. They actually wrote a song about Unity Valkyrie Mitford, which I'm going to play in a few seconds. So thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Carolyn Jaeger. God bless and hail victory.
Young girl, she met the Führer. Her name was Unity. Welcomed into his inner circle. Exciting times of the new Germany.
Valkyrie Mitford, she's left a place in history. Unity, Valkyrie Mitford, she didn't want the war with Germany. Germany, this upset young Unity, took a gun to her head. Führer cried for what he did see. Unity, Valkyrie Mitford, she's left a place in history. Unity, Valkyrie Mitford, she didn't want the war with Germany. Yeah!